All right, welcome back everyone to the deep dive. We're diving into a super important California Supreme Court case today. It's called Moss v. Superior Court, Ortiz.
Yeah, this one's really interesting, especially if you're, trying to wrap your head around family law and especially how the child support gets enforced.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it brings up some really fundamental questions about how we balance making sure kids get the financial support they need and also protecting the rights of the parents.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's what makes Moss so pivotal. It really digs into this question of when exactly a court can hold a parent in contempt, basically saying they've violated a court order for not paying child support, especially when the parent is saying, "Hey, I just can't afford it."
And that's where things get tricky, right? Because the court has to figure out, are they being truthful? Are they really unable to pay? Or are they just trying to avoid their responsibility? And this deep dive gets even more interesting because we're looking at cases where the parent actually has the ability to earn money. Like they have the skills and could be working, but they're choosing not to.
Right. And that adds this whole other layer of complexity to the legal issues.
So, to really understand the significance of the Moss case, I think it's helpful to start with the backstory, the kind of facts of the case. So, in Moss, we have Brent Moss, and initially, the court orders him to pay child support. Now, here's the catch. They base this order on his earning capacity, which they estimated to be around $671 per month, even though he was unemployed at the time.
Okay, so already we're seeing that the court isn't just taking his word for it that he has no income. They're looking at what he could be earning if he were working.
Exactly. And that's a key principle in family law, right? You can't just avoid working altogether to get out of paying child support. The courts are going to consider what you are capable of earning.
Makes sense. They want to prevent parents from manipulating the system, right? Like purposely staying unemployed or underemployed just to lower their support payments.
Exactly. So later on, the court actually modifies that initial child support order downward to 385 chatters a month.
Oh, wow. So a significant reduction.
Yeah, a big difference. But here's where the situation gets even more complicated. Despite this reduced amount, Moss doesn't make any child support payments for almost a year. He racks up a total of $5,210 in arrears.
Okay, so he's clearly in violation of a court order at this point, and a pretty substantial violation, too, with that amount of debt accumulating.
Right. So when he finally ends up in court, his defense is basically, I couldn't afford to pay. He testified that he was living with his mother, relying on her, and that his income was limited to whatever he could get from occasional odd jobs.
So his argument is that he just didn't have the means to make those $385 monthly payments.
Exactly. But the trial court wasn't buying it. They found him guilty of 24 counts of contempt of court.
24 counts. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's huge. And the penalties were pretty serious, too. He ended up serving time in jail and had to do community service as well. This really shows how seriously the courts take these child support orders.
Yeah, I mean, it sends a strong message that you can't just ignore your obligations.
Right. But hold on, there's a twist. This isn't the end of the story. Moss appeals the trial court's decision, and the Court of Appeal actually reverses the lower court's ruling.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
So what was their reasoning for overturning the contempt finding?
Well, they said there wasn't enough evidence to prove that Moss was actually capable of paying the child support that was ordered.
So basically, they sided with his argument that he couldn't afford it.
Yeah, and that's where the California Supreme Court steps in. They decide to take on the case because they realize that there's this conflict, this lack of clarity about what legal standards should apply in these kinds of child support enforcement cases.
Okay, so this is where the Supreme Court comes in to really iron out the legal details and set a precedent, right?
Exactly, yeah. And there were two really big legal questions that they needed to address. The first one, can courts base a contempt finding, holding someone in violation of a court order on a parent's earning capacity, like what they are capable of earning? Or do they have to strictly look at their actual current income and assets?
So that gets back to that idea of whether a parent could just choose not to work and then say they can't pay support.
Right. And then the second big question is about the burden of proof. In a contempt case like this, who has to prove whether or not the parent can pay? Does the state have to prove that the parent could be earning money? Or does the parent who's saying they can't afford it have to prove that?
Right, because that makes a big difference in how these cases play out.
Absolutely. Okay, so get this. The California Supreme Court was super clear in their answers to these questions. On that first one about earning capacity, they said, yes, absolutely, courts can consider that. Especially if it looks like a parent might be avoiding work just to get out of paying child support.
Makes sense to me. It wouldn't be fair if someone could just decide not to work and then use that as an excuse not to support their kids.
Right. The court is basically saying you have a responsibility to support your children, and if you're capable of working, you can't just shirk that responsibility.
Right, right. So what about the burden of proof? Who did they say has to prove whether the parent can pay?
So they were equally clear on that second question. They said that the parent who is claiming they can't afford to pay, in this case, Brent Moss, has the burden of proving that. And they have to prove it by what's called a preponderance of the evidence, which basically means they have to show that it's more likely than not that they couldn't pay.
So it's on them to provide evidence to support their claim, not on the state to prove that they could pay.
Right. The responsibility shifts to the parent in that situation.
Okay. So I'm curious, why did the court decide to put the burden of proof on the parent in these cases? What was their reasoning behind that?
Well, they laid out a couple of key reasons. First, they pointed out that practically speaking, parents usually have way more information about their own finances, you know, like how much they earn, their expenses, and whether they've been looking for work or not. It would be really hard for the state to try to prove those things, you know, to go digging around and try to show that a parent could be earning money.
Yeah, that would be a lot of investigative work for the state to take on, and it might not even be possible to prove definitively.
Right, right. So it's much more practical for the parent to just show the court their financial situation and explain why they couldn't pay.
Makes sense. So what was the other reason the court gave for putting the burden of proof on the parent?
So the second reason was about public policy. The state of California has a huge interest in making sure that kids get financial support from both parents. They don't want a situation where a parent can just avoid working and then say, oh, I can't pay, and then the kids end up relying on public assistance.
Right. That would be putting the burden on the state and taxpayers instead of on the parent who has the ability to support their children.
Exactly. They're trying to prevent that from happening.
Okay. So the court really wanted to make it clear that parents can't just shirk their responsibility and expect the state to pick up the slack.
Right. And they're backing that up by placing the burden of proof on the parent who's claiming they can't pay.
Gotcha. So we've talked about the two big questions the Supreme Court addressed, but I want to go back to their reasoning. Like, how did they justify their decision? What were the legal principles they were relying on?
Yeah, that's really important to understand. So they looked at the basic elements of contempt, you know, the things that have to be proven to find someone in contempt of court. And there are three main ones. First, there has to be a valid court order in place. Second, the person has to have known about that order. And third, they have to have willfully disobeyed it.
Okay, so those are the three key ingredients for a contempt finding.
Right. And in Moss's case, he admitted to the first two. He acknowledged that there is a child support order, and he knew about it.
So the real issue was that third element, right?
Right.
Whether he willfully disobeyed the order by not paying?
Exactly. But here's where it gets a little tricky. The court clarified that inability to comply, meaning being unable to pay, is what's called an affirmative defense.
Okay, so can you break down what affirmative defense means in this context? It sounds like a legal term that might be confusing.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, it means that if a parent is claiming they couldn't pay, it's not enough for them to just say that. They have to actually prove it.
So it's not on the state to prove they could pay.
Yeah.
It's on the parent to prove they couldn't.
Right. They have to actively show the court evidence that supports their claim.
Gotcha. So if they don't provide enough evidence, the court can basically assume they were willfully disobeying the order, even if they said they couldn't afford it.
Exactly. That's the implication.
Wow. Okay. So going back to Moss's case, he tried to argue that being forced to work to pay child support was a violation of his constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Specifically, the 13th Amendment, which prohibits involuntary servitude.
Yeah, he made that argument, which is a pretty serious claim, you know, invoking the Constitution.
Right, like he was saying it was a form of forced labor.
Exactly. So what did the Supreme Court have to say about that?
Well, they rejected that argument pretty firmly. They said that child support is not involuntary servitude. It's a fundamental duty that parents have to their children.
So they're saying that it's not the same as being forced to work against your will. It's a basic responsibility that comes with being a parent.
Right. And they also clarified that community service, which Moss was ordered to do as part of his punishment, is totally constitutional in these cases.
Okay. So they're drawing a clear line between forced labor, which is prohibited, and the obligation to support your children, which is a fundamental duty.
Exactly. Now, I know there was also a dissenting opinion in this case from Justice Kennard. What was her perspective on all of this?
Yeah, so Justice Kennard actually agreed with a lot of what the majority of the court said, But she had a different view about whether the ability to earn standard should have been applied to Moss specifically.
Okay, so she wasn't disagreeing with the principle itself, but with how it was applied in this case.
Right. Her argument was basically that at the time Moss didn't pay child support, the law about using earning capacity wasn't as clear as it is now. She thought it might have been unfair to hold him to a standard that wasn't so clearly established back then.
So she was saying maybe he didn't fully understand the consequences of not working, and that it wasn't fair to punish him so harshly for it.
Yeah, that was her main point. But the majority of the court disagreed with her on that. They emphasized that parents have always had a duty to support their kids financially, and that's a long-standing principle, even if the specific legal language about ability to earn was evolving.
Right, so they're saying that even if the legal standards were being clarified, the underlying obligation to support your children was always there.
Exactly. And that really gets to the heart of what Moss v. Superior Court established. They essentially created a test for courts to use in these types of cases.
Okay, so based on what we've talked about, what does this test boil down to? What are the two main things that a parent who claims they can't afford child support has to prove now?
Well, first, they have to show that they actually didn't have the financial means to pay. You know, like they genuinely couldn't afford it. And second, and this is really important, they have to prove that this inability to pay wasn't because they were intentionally choosing to stay unemployed or underemployed when they could have been working.
So they can't just say, I'm unemployed, I can't pay. They have to show that they were actively trying to work and still couldn't make ends meet.
Right. And that's a big deal for custodial parents, you know, the ones who are primarily responsible for the kids. It gives them some legal protection against non-paying parents who try to use unemployment as an excuse.
Absolutely. It makes it much harder for parents to just shirk their responsibility without any consequences.
But it's important to remember, this doesn't mean that parents who are facing real financial hardship are out of luck. They can still present evidence to the court to show that they genuinely couldn't pay, even if they were trying to work.
Right. Like if they lost their job through no fault of their own, or they have a disability that prevents them from working, they can explain that to the court.
Exactly. The court will consider those factors. The key is that they have to be able to prove that they were doing everything they could to meet their obligations.
So in the end, Moss v. Superior Court really reinforces how important it is for parents to financially support their children. It sets clear expectations and consequences for parents who try to avoid that responsibility.
Yeah, it's a landmark case that really clarifies the powers that courts have to enforce child support orders and how they balance those powers with protecting the rights of parents.
Right, and it highlights the importance of both those things. Making sure kids are taken care of and making sure parents get a fair hearing.
Right. Well, that's our deep dive into Moss v. Superior Court. It's a fascinating case that really gets to the heart of some fundamental issues in family law.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think about the complexities of these situations and how the courts try to navigate them fairly.
It does. And it makes you wonder, you know, how do those principles from Moss, which was decided back in 1998, how do they apply in today's world? You know, with the gig economy and all these new ways of working, is the ability to earn standard still a good measure? What does it even mean to be capable of working in that context?
Yeah, those are great questions. It's something to think about for sure.
Definitely food for thought. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Moss v. Superior Court. We'll be back next time with another fascinating case. Until then, keep diving deep.
See you next time.